888-803-4438.
Boo! Boo!
That was the worst thing I ever heard.
It was terrible.
Horrendous.
Well, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, yeah?
There were parts of it I liked.
Yeah, I liked a lot of it.
Yeah, it was good.
It was great.
It's wonderful.
Oh, bravo.
More!
More!
You are listening to The Micro Effect. Microbroadcasters covering 194,000 square miles and bringing the people's voice to little towns all across America.
Folks, welcome back to The Micro Effect. Again, Dr. A. Truat is not here with you today. My name is Clint Richardson. I will be with you for the next 7 days through about Tuesday of next week while True is on sabbatical. Wish him safe travels, all that he's doing. I want to thank The Micro Effect for suffering me and allowing me to do this. It's an honor to be asked, and I appreciate it. Also ask that you support this wonderful thing they've got going, these micro broadcasters, and you can do that by going to themicroeffect.com. All right, well, I'll tell you what, let's talk about, I'm very interested in what's going on out there with your, there's a lot of different types of radio outlets out there, and it sounds like you guys are doing something and have been doing something for quite some time that, is really interesting. Now, am I correct that Radio Free Oklahoma is actually broadcast on FM bands?
Well, it's now known as Resistance Radio. Its first incarnation was Radio Free Oklahoma, which started in May of 2006. And it's been on the air for most of that time with a couple hiccups due to equipment failures. But they've been able to upgrade their equipment and keep it running, and they've had to switch locations a couple times. But Resistance Radio is on the FM dial in Oklahoma City. And it's been successful. We work in collaboration with the guys who do that, and they work in collaboration with the station down in Austin, Texas, run by Deb Stevens of the Rule of Law. And she has actually argued in court against the FCC, federal court, and won her case against the FCC, and the FCC does not seem inclined to pursue it any farther. I think they don't want to seek precedent on a federal ruling in the case. So it appears for the time being that in Austin and in Oklahoma City, Resistance Radio will remain on the air.
You know, what you're saying then is that you're broadcasting under FCC regulations so that their rules do not apply? Is that correct?
Well, we operate outside of their charter. Their charter is very specific and really doesn't apply to communications that originate within a state and do not cross state lines and are not direct point-to-point communications. This is broadcasting. The FCC has been violating their charter for years, and they've largely remained unchallenged in court on that issue. They've been challenged on broadcasting issues through other avenues of approach, but Deb's approach by challenging them on their charter and their powers to regulate communications within a state so far has survived their challenges. So,
tell us her information again, because that establishes precedent for anybody else that wants to or is interested in pursuing this.
Well, Deb Stevens runs the Logos Radio Network out of Austin, Texas, and I believe she can be you can communicate with her through her website at thelogosradionetwork.com. So far it appears that this station in Oklahoma has been shut down before by agents of the FCC and has resurrected itself when it found that it had legal basis to do so. And it appears that for the time being that they can't come after us.
FCC being a federal, this is the age-old battle. California is a good example with the marijuana growers out there battling the feds while the state says it's okay. You're pretty much suffering the same thing. The state says it's okay, but the federal agents come in anyway, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's often what the FCC does. And that's often enough to scare someone when they show up at your doorstep with a couple badges and a letter saying that you're liable for $10,000 worth of fines if you don't shut down. People shut down. It's scary to be visited by agents of the state bearing these letters. But when you have legal standing, you now have some ground to stand on.
Well, now, so for anybody else that's perhaps interested, what does it take to get involved in this? And are we talking about we're talking about the FM band? So it's a local.
Yes.
It's a local. It probably only covers what 20, 30 miles at the most.
Yes, if you have the right equipment, you can cover most of a standard metroplex. Oklahoma City is actually quite large in surface area, and we cover most of the metroplex with our equipment from one station. And if you're interested in replicating our model, you can contact Chris Emery, who's involved with promoting Resistance Radio. You can contact him at our website at freemindfilms.com. You can contact at freemindfilms.com. We will forward the emails on to Chris. And he is involved and has been involved in the past, too, in setting up these stations in different towns and getting the word out. And what I found is that setting up a station on the FM dial is one of the biggest wake-up tools there are. I mean, we tried a lot of different things in Oklahoma City to really get the word out. And the FM dial is by far the most effective means because people are flipping through the station while they're driving, and all of a sudden they have a trumpet of truth coming through the radio, and they're hearing things that they will never hear on the mainstream radio. And there have been dozens that I know of firsthand, and I'm sure hundreds or thousands of people who have woken up because of Resistance Radio here in Oklahoma City. Are we still live?
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. My mic was. I used to be in the business, and I've never heard of this. And so it's very impressive that you guys have been able to accomplish this. I don't think a lot of people know this, even this option even exists. What are we talking about as far as price estimate?
The estimate we're giving to people is at least $5,000, and
that's it.
That's for a simple rig. You can go up to $10,000 for some really, really top quality stuff that's going to last longer and have better coverage. I'm not too involved in the technical end. I really don't know a whole lot about that. Chris Emery is involved with that and advising Resistance Radio on the stuff that they need. But, what we did was basically we had a fundraiser. We had several people who wanted to get this done. We pulled our money. We had a fundraiser, and we were able to raise the money to buy the initial equipment and to buy upgrades. And it's amazing once you get the word out, once you're on the air, and then once you get the word out that you need money to keep going, people will pony up because they want to hear the stuff on the radio. They will.
Now, what about advertisers? Do you actually have advertisers, commercials?
Advertising is problematic because to avoid the intervention of the IRS and the FCC, it cannot be for commercial purposes. There are sponsors that can place ads and be sponsors on the station, and there are some nitty-gritty details to that I'm really not familiar with, but it can be done. But it can be done, yeah.
So it's just a battle of semantics. And, what are the chances of your equipment getting confiscated?
It's never happened, and it never will. It's a three-step process to confiscation. They have to serve you a warning, and then a second warning, and then they come in with a warrant and they take all your stuff. So, I mean, there's going to be plenty of, they're not just going to show up and take all your expensive equipment. They can't do that. They actually have to follow their own protocol on that. And the first time will be a visit. And at that point, you can either shut down or you can start challenging them in court, and then we have challenged them in court and won. So you can certainly do that. And it was pro bono. We didn't have to hire a lawyer or any of that. Deb went to court by herself, this little, you know, 90-pound woman, and stood before this federal judge and all the FCC's lawyers and won. So it's not especially expensive to fight this in court, although it can be time consuming. But I think the SEC right for right now is really not wanting to do that, because they're afraid of setting a precedent with a federal ruling that would forever limit the charter and the scope of SEC powers.
I would make it public information. We can't have that. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm very interested in what happened with the actual Timothy McVeigh case, the federal grand jury that was convened after the investigation for indictment. There was a gentleman named Hoppy. Hoppy, is it Heidelberg?
Yes.
He claimed that he was dismissed from the jury for writing a letter to the judge demanding evidence, demanding to call witnesses, basically?
Yes. Hoppy Heidelberg was on the standing grand jury that was given the job to indict Tim McVeigh, Terry Nichols, and others unknown, in their words, for the bombing. Hoppy Heidelberg was on this grand jury, and in his powers as a grand juror, as outlined in the grand juror handbook, a federal grand juror, not just the foreman, a federal grand juror, anyone in the jury, on the grand jury, can subpoena evidence to find the truth of a case, truth of a matter, if it's true or not. And the fact is, Hoppy Heidelberg started requesting videotape evidence, bomb expert evidence, the floor plans for the Murrah building, and other evidence, as is due his rights as a grand juror. Well, the judge could not dismiss any of these questions because they were within his right. So the judge resorted to dismissing Hoppy Heidelberg from the grand jury without cause, just dismissed him without cause, so he wouldn't have to answer this evidence. So, Hoppy Heidelberg, he did that, and he was shortly thereafter subjected to, actually, while he was on the grand jury, the FBI was paying him visits and trying to intimidate him into playing along with the federal prosecutors. The federal prosecution system with the grand jury these days is basically basically a kangaroo court, but that was not supposed to be the purpose of a grand jury. The grand jury is not just to provide indictments for the government. The grand jury's job also is to protect citizens from persecution from the government. It's a sword and a shield. It's not just a tool of the federal prosecutors, and that's what it's largely being used to for this day. But Hoppy Heidelberg was concerned about the evidence in the Oklahoma City bombing, was dismissed, and basically run out of business and surveilled and intimidated by the FBI simply for trying to exercise his due powers as a grand juror.
Yeah, and I think this is very important. You know, there's a lot of movements out there to educate jurors, to make them understand what's happening. A lot of people don't care, unfortunately, but there a lot of people do. And, it's important to know that, there's a lot of misconceptions in the jury hall when you're in there and you're discussing things. That there's a lot of misconceptions that only the foreman of the jury is allowed to associate with outside influences. They say you can't watch TV and you can't, a lot of these things are just urban myths, basically, that juries, that they're, unless they're officially sequestered, I believe, in a way that, I don't know, it just seems like our juries nowadays are extremely uneducated in the jury process, in their job.
Well, the jury system and the grand jury system in this country is largely corrupted, and it's fallen short of its original ideal of a fact-finding body of your peers to determine if the evidence warrants a trial. And the sequestering and the shielding of outside influence is mainly so the prosecutors can mold the case as they see fit. As one lawyer said in relation to the Oklahoma City bombing, in a trial you don't see the crime, you see the shadows of the trial on the courtroom wall. So, I mean, as Hoppy Heidelberg said, grand jurors need to be well-informed, unless they are sequestered, which, well, they were not. And they need to be inquisitive bodies, not just an audience to a show put on by a federal prosecutor. Because in the grand jury process, there's no defense. It's just the prosecutor and they're presenting evidence. And the grand jury is supposed to figure out if this evidence warrants a trial through their own digging into the evidence, but that's simply not the case these days.
And I guess it's important to note that Mr. Heidelberg simply wanted to see the most important evidence of all, which just happened to be the video footage of the truck, the very thing that this whole case was about, and he was not allowed to do that. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Once he requested the tapes and once he requested the testimony of bombing experts to see if the truck bomb was the cause of destruction and other things, he was dismissed without cause because they could not tell him no to these requests. They were legal and lawful in every sense of the word in the paperwork that they had given him. So they simply dismissed him without cause and started harassing him and harassing his business associates and calling up his friends and families and neighbors and asking them if they really wanted to do business with a terrorist. They actually labeled Hoppy Heidelberg a terrorist because he was asking questions and trying to fulfill his duty as a grand juror.
And this was literally to decide someone's fate, to decide someone's life or death, either in prison or their execution. One question that it's really bugging me. You know, we have these mandates back from the early vestiges of this country that say that that a trial, a federal trial, must remain within a state. If this event happened in Oklahoma City, the question becomes, why was the trial moved, first of all, and then why was this man put to death in Indiana instead of Oklahoma?
Well, the Constitution mandates that a federal crime must be tried in the federal court district in which it occurred. But the Oklahoma City case, for the first time in history, was moved out of that district, moved to Denver. And, you know, the reasons why are probably mainly speculative, but some people have there were enough people in Oklahoma who would have served on that jury to decide the case who would have heard first-hand or second-hand accounts of things that were anomalous to the official story that probably would have thrown a verdict in risk. So they moved it to Colorado. And in the investigation, we interviewed Harmon Taylor, who served as a defense advisor to a lawsuit trying to keep McVeigh alive, to preserve him as a witness to the bombing and to question him as to what he truly knew about the bombing. Now, I'm not saying McVeigh was innocent. He was involved as a follower, not as a mastermind by any means. But Harmon Taylor submitted his case to the federal courts that it was unconstitutional to move this case out of Oklahoma to try it in Colorado. And the court's decision, the appeals court decision, was basically, all of your arguments are sound, but they do not apply. They're basically saying that the Constitution does not apply. And it really threw Harmon Taylor for a loop. He had never really seen the face of the legal system for what it was. He was an attorney at the time. And after that, he saw the legal system for what it was, and he actually gave up his bar card and now practices as a paralegal advisor for people arguing pro bono cases in courts. And actually, we'll be releasing Harmon Taylor's interview at a later time in an extended version of A Noble Lie as in a director's cut.
Well, I think this is a very important, this is back to what we were talking about earlier, is, you know, the court system, there's several cases. You can read the Founding Fathers quotes about how the judiciary was supposed to be the least influential, least powerful body. And within the Founding Fathers' lifespan, became the most influential, the most powerful. It interprets the Constitution. The Constitution is not set in stone in any way, shape, or form. So we have the Bar Association. It's contracted by government to sit in these courts. A lot of these courts are private corporations where the through Freedom of Information Acts, we found out that the courts are owned sometimes by the judges, rented out to the city. So, I mean, we're talking about a very much a for-profit structure when we're talking about the court system. And unfortunately, prisoners are traded as commodities in the court registry investment system, which has been talked about on this show before as well. So we are not – the Constitution really has no place in court because we don't have a constitutional entity that is running the courts. It is, you know, for all intents and purposes, a private association called the Bar Association. So it's, you know, they don't, a lot of times they won't even accept case law prior to the point where the bar took over, which was 1938-ish, which would go against what the bar has set up. Which is definitely anti-constitutional. Just because the Constitution is mentioned in court does not really mean that it's considered. It is, again, interpretable, and that's very much a problem. And this guy, this defender, obviously got a taste of that in a very big way. And that's, you know, it once you realize that, a lot of people do leave the bar. A lot of people become... You know, you don't have to be part of the bar to be an attorney. You can still represent people. In fact, next Tuesday, I'm going to have a gentleman named Bert from Colorado who's going to be talking about this very subject. You know, he's got it down to a science by simply studying the rules of court procedure, because that takes precedent over just about anything. So it's a sad state we're in, and this is why, you know, the legal recourse, unfortunately, is looking very grim once you get into contract courts. So, you know, I still can't believe that the jury was not allowed, even through request, to see video footage. I mean, that it's one thing for the people not to see, but when the evidence is subjected, you know, refused to the very jury that's going to decide the man's fate. What? Okay, so the death sentence is carried out in Indiana, not Oklahoma, which still absolutely blows my mind. And then the FBI admits after the trial to withholding evidence?
Yes. McVeigh's case was actually delayed by several weeks because several thousand documents were discovered by an auditor in the Justice Department that had not been released to the McVeigh defense team. And there was word that there were several thousand other documents that were never released, obviously, and we know that for a fact. We know that they never released McVeigh's full military record, his medical record, and none of his psychological or special forces records. So, yes, there were certainly documents withheld that might have helped his defense, and only establishing that he was not acting alone that day. It was not so much the defense's, the defense strategy they followed, which kind of played into the hands of the federal prosecutors, was they really couldn't follow a whole lot of the evidence of other perpetrators because they also implicated their client. So that's the defense strategy they pursued, and that was not a winning strategy. McVeigh was executed on June 11th, I believe, June 11th of 2001. And then he was no autopsy was performed on his body, and he was cremated. And it's funny, his death certificate, which is very interesting, it lists his employer as U.S. Army and his occupation as soldier. It didn't ask his veteran status. It didn't ask if he'd been in the Army. It asked what his employer and occupation was. It said U.S. Army and soldier. And this is 9 years after McVeigh left the military. Several different jobs between here and there, and there was no reason to list his employer and occupation as U.S. Army soldier.
But the media definitely reported, I remember the media reported that he was a part of, you know, an ex-military that was part of these so-called, white supremacist, the current villain of the day, basically.
Well, McVeigh told his first set of attorneys that he had been recruited out of the Army to infiltrate neo-Nazi activities. He told his family that he, in special forces training, he had been recruited to work covert operations. He told Terry Nichols that he was working undercover for the FBI. He named his handler by name, Larry Potts. His attorneys believed him. His first set of attorneys, they backed out of the case because it freaked him out. They certainly did. I mean, his first attorneys were some of the best attorneys in the state of Oklahoma. And when he told them that he was working for the government, that they backed out. They wanted nothing to do with it. So by all accounts, and the evidence dictates that he was still working for the government at the time of the bombing.
Just amazing stuff, man. I congratulate you on this. This fantastic documentary. For those that want to get a copy, why don't you tell them where to get that?
Yes, go to anoblelie.com. You can watch the trailers there. We just picked up Best Historical Documentary at the Bare Bones Film Festival. We've placed in a number of other film festivals, so it is receiving a little mainstream validation, which is good, we're getting the word out. People are really waking up to the fact about Oklahoma City, and they're recognizing the movie, and we're just happy finally that the true story is finally told instead of being covered up by those, the powers that be.
You had any threats, any heat come down for doing this?
Nothing too sinister. There have been some surveillance has been done. Some questions have been asked about some of us, but nothing overt. Someone got followed, and then one of our investigators, and he tried playing old school, trying to outrun him. I said, "No, don't do that. This is the new paradigm. You don't run away anymore. You break out your camera and you film it. That's what you do. There's no reason to run away and knock over trash cans and dive into parking garages and all of that stuff. Simply stop, get your camera out, and film what's going on and put it online. They can't get away with that stuff anymore."
Yeah, I hope you're right about that. That's what I advise people to do too. Always, traffic stops and everything else, and make sure you let them know that they're on camera. And if they want a contract with you, then let them know that they're passing laws now that they're putting people in jail for filming public officials, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Your camera is your best friend. It really is. I have to agree. And I'll tell you, it's saved more than a few people. We have a guy here that got pulled over in Salt Lake City here that, he went to court, and he thought he won the case because he knew the film footage was there. They were going to provide the footage in court, of the dash cam of the police officers yelling at him and just completely treating him like trash. And when the film footage came in, they had changed the audio. They had professionally changed the audio so that it appeared that the police officers treated him with dignity and respect. And his reaction to that was one of sheer panic, because he's sitting up there now accused of perjury, because the film footage says something different. And this is why it's so important to, if you're to do any kind of action, if you're going to do anything like this, always have a friend with you and always have a camera on each other. And I'll tell you, it's a lifesaver. We are coming back for the last half hour of The Story Behind the Story. And we'll be back more about it. Bye.
Thank you, sir. I think you saved my life.
Evidence, Johnson. Even raccoons respect the authority of a man with good nutrition. That's me. Now, what's going on here?
Well, he started it, sir. I was trying to clean this fish, and he tried to take it from me.
Yeah, well, you must have looked a little wimpy.
Sir, I'm hungry.
Johnson, if you'd have brought your own supply of freeze-dried food from the freeze-dry guy, like I told you, you wouldn't have to be out here picking on the cute little animals.
Oh, I'd give anything for a big chunk of protein right now.
Johnson, don't salivate. It's unbecoming a Marine.
I'm sorry, sir. I should have called the freeze-dry guy.
Bugs you, Donut Johnson. You're suffering your MREs, and I'm enjoying chicken a la king and lasagna and bacon and eggs for breakfast.
Sir, shut up.
Johnson?
Sorry, sir.
Get your own supply of the best long-term storage food available. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com.
Concerned about the quality of water you're
drinking? Water.com.
Concerned about price and quality bottled water.
Berkeywater.com.
Concerned about natural contaminants in your water?
Berkeywater.com.
Or call 888-344.
That's 888-803-4438.
The last thing the men behind the curtain want is a conscious, informed public capable of critical thinking, which is why a continually fraudulent zeitgeist is output via religion, the mass media, and the educational system. They seek to keep you in a distracted, naive bubble, and they are doing a damn good job of it.
President Bush signed a formal agreement that will end the United States as we know it. And he took the step without approval from either the U.S. Congress or the people of the United States.
Illuminati, you come to take control. You can take my heartbeat, but you can break my soul. We all shall be free.
TheMicroEffectLive.com. Undistorted truth. Talk hosts that blow the horn on the Matrix world. Welcome to TheMicroEffectLive.com. Say goodbye to fake news. Say goodbye to fake radio. Welcome to TheMicroEffectLive.com. The intelligent source for news, updates, and of course, the truth.
Alright, folks, welcome back. You're on The Story Behind the Story. I'm Clint Richardson. And with me is Holland, who's the co-producer, co-writer of A Noble Lie. We've had a very interesting show today. A lot of truth being exposed here. A lot of hidden evidence. And I commend you, sir, for all of your efforts and everybody involved in the project, your radio network, which I am intrigued by, Resistance Radio out there in Oklahoma, and I think more people should definitely look into that. I know I will be. Now, one of the, again, it's amazing that these things are happening in not just Oklahoma, but in other states. So here we have a gentleman named, which you did promote him in the movie, and you showed his case, which is one of the saddest cases in the whole story, the whole Oklahoma bombing story. Our attorney, our local attorney out here, Mr. Trinidou, Jesse Trinidou, has been fighting this fight for more than a decade, if I'm not mistaken. But his brother was killed in jail, mistaken apparently for being someone else. And I've had the pleasure of going to a couple of his recent trials. Mr. Trinidou is literally suing the CIA, Federal Bureau of Investigation, several other government agencies, and trying to, through Freedom of Information, get a lot of the information to find out why and how his brother was killed in jail. And it seems like everything that he has pulled up and discovered always leads back to the Oklahoma City bombing case. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Trinidou.
Yes, Jesse Trinidad has become a friend of ours. His brother Kenny was picked up on a parole violation right after the bombing and flown by Conair to the Federal Transfer Center in Oklahoma City, which was a bit unusual. His case was in California. All the people who could have done anything were in California, and it was a very simple parole misunderstanding more than a violation. He had several encounters with law enforcement before. It had never been a problem, but for some reason they pick him up when he crossed the border visiting family in Mexico, coming back to San Diego. They ran his stuff, and he had done that several times before, but this time they snatched him up and they flew him to Oklahoma City. Jesse called him on the phone, and there really didn't seem to be anything to worry about. They didn't even think he'd go to jail or do any real time, and he had done hard time before for a previous offense, and he was a tough guy, and it was not a problem whatever was going to happen. But a couple days later, Kenny Trinidad ends up dead. And when they get the body back, it's covered in bruises. It has, he's been strangled, his head has been beat in, and his throat has been slashed. And they ruled this a suicide. Well, obviously it was not. The Oklahoma State Medical Examiner told Jesse that it was a torture homicide, that the bruises on the soles of his feet were indicative of torture. The fact that he had been injected with caffeine, enhanced pain under torture, and that it was a homicide. So Jesse pursued the case in federal court and won a wrongful death lawsuit against the government on that, and put up the money for information leading to the reason for his brother's murder. They knew he had been murdered, but they didn't know why. Well, Jesse started getting leaked information from people involved with the case, and he was told that his brother had been mistaken for John Doe number 2. He fit a profile of a man with a bank robbery history. Kenny Trinidad bore the unfortunate same tattoo as suspected John Doe number 2, same mustache, same build, same complexion, same color hair, same record, but they weren't the same people. It was simply, in this case, a tragic coincidence. But this led to more revelations in the Oklahoma City bombing. Now he realized that his brother's death was tied to Oklahoma City. Jesse started pursuing Oklahoma City and issuing FOIA requests for the videotapes, for other evidence. And this has exposed the fact that McVeigh was surrounded by government informants in and around him up until the days before the bombing, that the government knew who McVeigh was, knew he was planning something, but for some reason did not stop him. And Jesse Trinidad's quest to find out the truth in his brother's murder has led to so many revelations in Oklahoma City, and he continues the quest to this day. He has lately submitted a FOIA request to find out the DNA results from the extra unclaimed identified leg found in the rubble of the Murrah building. There was an extra leg that belonged to none of the known victims that has never been identified. And the FBI lately came back and said that they cannot find those DNA tests, just like they cannot find the videotapes that ring the Murrah building. The FBI's excuse to this day why they will release the videotapes is that they've lost the videotapes, lost them all, and can't release them.
Don't you hate it when that happens? I mean, you find an extra leg, and you just don't know what to do with it. It's a horrible situation. Mr. Trinidad, you know, the last time I didn't attend his last couple, but the first few, and you know, this is a note and a wake-up call for people who are in the Salt Lake area. Ogden, Provo, and all the surrounding areas. Here we are kind of an island in the middle of sort of nowhere. You know, this is a wake-up call. Anybody that's local here, this gentleman is a true, true, true patriot. He's going into court by himself, very few witnesses, very few people attending the court procedure, and he's taking on the FBI. Last time he was in court, the FBI, the girl, and I say girl because she's a very young FBI agent that does not know how to present a case. She's really horrible, and that case should have been decided a long time ago. Just because this girl is amazing, the defendant. And
well, they sent someone to fall on a sword. No one wanted to argue. No one of value in the Justice Department wanted to go before a federal judge and argue that they lost the tape. So they sent someone who was a bit of an underling to fall on that sword for them.
I'll tell you what. The first time I went, it was me and two other people who went with me, and one other person that I didn't know that was sitting in the audience. The next time had a few more people because we were actually promoting it. Now, again, I haven't been back, but people, this courtroom should be stacked. This courtroom should be full of people, and these people If Jesse was smart, he would tell the people to be witnesses and tell them and tell the judge in court that all these people are going to make official complaints against the judge, because, you know, a judge can't continue to be a judge if the public starts complaining. I mean, you make three complaints against a judge, they're out.
Well, the judge in this case, and in fact in his previous cases, Jesse has been blessed actually with two judges who have been sympathetic to his arguments and have held the FBI accountable. The FBI, I mean, the judge in the latest hearing told the FBI to come back into court in June with the tapes or a much better excuse.
Sure.
And, I mean, so there are certain exceptions.
But keep in mind, now, the testimony of the FBI agent that one of the things she said was, well, sir, we're the FBI. We're trustworthy. I mean, you have to trust us. So this is what we're up against as far as – I guess the point is I would like to see people start taking an active interest in this. You've just heard the complete evidentiary findings of a group like yours, and people need to start going to courts. People not just need to start backing up people that are doing this. This guy's taking on the whole system by himself. No one's really helping him. There's people that are supporting him, but very few. And if you're in the Salt Lake area, I demand that you start looking into this. Do you happen to know his website, by the way?
Jesse Trentini's website. The information on the case is at kmtreward.com. That stands for Kenneth Michael Trentini, reward.com, kmtreward.com. Or just look up kennethmichaeltrentini.com. There's a shortcut to that site. Jesse needs all the support he can get in court. I mean, he's an old man, and he's getting tired. He's told me himself it's wearing him down, but he continues the fight for justice because his brother was his best friend, and he loved his brother, and they grew up in the hills of West Virginia together, and he will not let the FBI get away with murdering his kin. So he's doing what he can.
Let's call it what it was. It was torture. I mean, these pictures that you can see on that website, this was torture. Now, even if it wasn't his brother, I want people to understand this man was brutally, brutally tortured, okay, in jail. In a jail, even if it wasn't his brother, we're talking about a government agency coming into a jail and torturing someone who they think is part of a case. Okay, that alone should raise many, many red flags. The fact that it was Jesse's brother, I guess, really just boils down to the fact that because Jesse is an attorney, a good attorney, which I don't say lightly, you know, the fact that he's in there fighting the battle probably is only because he is an attorney, because he had the power to actually induce a little self-investigation. But that it's torture should be the number one concern here, no matter who it is.
Exactly. And, I would highly advise the listeners in Salt Lake City to look up the information or contact Jesse or his office and find out when the next hearing is. It would be great if there was a large sympathetic audience in courtroom in June for the next hearing, where the FBI has to either produce the tapes or something other than we can't find them. So, yeah, I mean, he needs all the support he can get. I wish I was there to be there for the hearing, and we've been there as much as we can for Jesse. We were there a month or two ago for a screening where we met with Jesse right after that hearing. And it would really warm his heart, and it would give hope to him, because he is, you know, fighting this fight by himself, and it is wearing him down. And he needs the support of his community here in Salt Lake City to carry on. He needs their strength.
Absolutely. You know, I wouldn't be doing my due diligence, especially on this radio program and for the audience listening, if I didn't inquire. Now, one of the things I respected the most about your documentary is that it was really stuck to the facts. It didn't offer theories, as you said. It didn't offer a solution, but it just presented the facts, and that is very much after my own heart. You're left to do with those facts what you will. But I have to ask. I have to present my due diligence and ask, in all of your investigations, all of your contacts. Now, it's almost impossible to do a thorough investigation of such things as 9/11 and other so-called terrorist attacks that have happened against America and not come up with the Zionist Israeli Mossad connection. Did you come across any of that during the Oklahoma City bombing investigation for your documentary?
Just tidbits, nothing outstanding. We do know that one of the commerce, the chambers of commerce here in Oklahoma City, one of the leaders actually escorted a couple members of the Israeli government around the bombing site immediately after the bombing, and they were probably at least reporting to intelligence agencies upon the effects there. We do know that, and this is documented in a new book that came out just last week by Roger Charles, called Oklahoma City, What the Investigation Missed and Why It Still Matters. We're actually going to have him as a guest on our show tonight. That Andy Strassmeyer, who is a known government informant who was friends with McVeigh and probably assisted him with the bombing and was seen in the basement of the Murrah building with bomb-making material just a couple days before the bombing, Andy Strassmeyer was a supposed neo-Nazi, but he had spent his summers as a young man on the kibbutz in Israel, where he acknowledged that he did have contact with Israeli intelligence and the military, and he did conduct military patrols in the settlements there. And then for some reason he later becomes a neo-Nazi, which is kind of problematic. Most likely he was deep cover all along. So, I mean, nothing, no solid trail that leads back to those perps, but like in all cases, I'm sure at the very least they were monitoring developments.
Well, I understand that Strassmeyer, was it?
Yes.
Strassmeyer? I understand that he was also, his father was a German chancellor, and I believe mm-hmm. that his wife was wasn't she a Israeli national? So I mean, you don't.
Well,
you know, women don't marry. Jewish women don't marry other
Nazis.
You know. Yeah, I mean, or anything out of the Jewish. You know.
Well, I don't know how observant she was, but he actually acquired a girlfriend who was of Israeli citizenship. I know that his movements after the bombing are somewhat shady, but the word we've gotten is that he did actually for a time go back to Israel and acquire a Israeli girlfriend, which is causing his whole neo-Nazi credentials into question to the extreme, of course. But who knows? I mean, many levels of this case are still shrouded in secrecy.
Yeah, I know CBS did a little report on that, too. It's very, like I said, you know, all roads generally, when you look into these things, if you look into it long enough and hard enough, you'll find that they lead to such organizations as the CIA connected with, you know, the Mossad. It's very, very sad, and considering our government is full of dual Israeli citizens, that's a whole other can of worms to open. But very, very important to always take into consideration when talking about these things. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Any new information that's come out since you've made this movie?
Well, the case is still open. We are still pursuing leads. We are still taking in information. And any of those of you who are listening who want to offer any information or assistance, please email us at contact@freemindfilms.com. And we will respond to any and all emails that aren't obvious provocations. And it's funny when you actually when someone offers you to send something and offers to send me something and I reply, that's fine, just I do not consent to receiving any illegal material, then you suddenly don't hear from them again. So, yeah, I'm not going to fall for that. But, yeah, certainly if you want to share something with us, a tip, we are still pursuing this case with further projects that we have in mind and are working on, and we're still pursuing the perpetrators. And for those of you listening, you can find out more by going to anoblelie.com. And I actually, the film crew actually, we have our own radio station on radio show on Resistance Radio, that also broadcasts on 19 other FM and AM stations, and of course online. It's called Free Mind Report at freemindreport.com. And tonight our guest is going to be Colonel Roger Charles, the author of the book Oklahoma City, What the Investigation Missed and Why It Still Matters. We don't concentrate on Oklahoma City for all of our topics, but because of the timing of this book and the anniversary, we are looking at Oklahoma City for the time being. And Roger Charles had been the consultant to ABC when they canceled that show on government foreknowledge of the bombing. And his book is very good. It goes into many aspects of this case. And we'll have him talking on our show more at length about his investigation, his contribution to the truth-seeking effort, and what he thinks really happened behind the Oklahoma City bombing. So I'm sure that's going to be very interesting. That's a Free Mind Report at freemindreport.com. But we are continuing on with the filmmaking process on other projects and other media projects. We really have dedicated ourselves and crossed the Rubicon in this fight, and there's no backing down. So if anyone wants to get a hold of us, of course, you can contact us at contact@freemindfilms.com. And I highly advise this movie, because one of the purposes of A Noble Lie was not just to wake people up to the bombing, but to demonstrate that the government is capable of a cover-up of a massive level on mass murder. Because the thing is, with Oklahoma City, people can look at this evidence without fear, with objectivity. 9/11, despite the weight and voluminous body of evidence, most people are really afraid to delve too deep into it because they're still scared about 9/11 and its implications. Oklahoma City is once removed. They're no longer scared of Oklahoma City, and they can look at this information. Once they realize that the government is capable of a cover-up of this massive a scale and the implications thereof, they can follow those implications to the present day if their personal moral integrity and bravery can take them that far. I mean, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And this is certainly a water trough that we're presenting for anyone who's willing to take a drink from it. And I've been told by people that this movie has waken up friends and families of theirs who blew off 9/11 because it's too much. But they can look at 9/11 at Oklahoma City and see the evidence that indicts the official story. This unimpeachable evidence that cannot be denied. I would welcome a debate on this evidence we have presented. Welcome it, but I fear, with good reason, that no one will take up the gauntlet on that, because someone would be very foolish to try to defend the official story of Oklahoma City. It's a wet paper bag, and it simply does not hold water. So, this movie was not only to shed light on the bombing, but to shed light on the false flag methodology being employed by this government and others.
Well, again, I commend you. Why don't you tell us a little bit? We just have a few minutes left here, but when you say we, who else is on your team and their professions, if you don't mind?
Well, our core affinity group is director James Lane, who's also a co-host on the show. Austin Green, the editor for the project, is now hosting Free Mind Report along with myself. We are the three co-hosts. Chris Emery, co-writer and narrator on the project. He is a solid contribution to all of our efforts. He's more involved in the resistance radio side of things. So for those of you interested in setting up low-power FMs, please send us the contact, and we'll forward that information to him. And we have several other people involved in the process. Our co-writer, Wendy Painting, is in New York. She's a professor, and she's actually writing her PhD thesis on the Oklahoma City bombing. And, it's really important for those people out there. You really can't accomplish a whole lot on your own. Now, some people can. There are extraordinary individuals out there who can accomplish a whole lot on their own, and I give them applause. But for most of us, you need to find a core affinity group that you can trust with your life and that you can trust will not bow out of the challenge before them, who are committed to achieving truth and justice in any way possible. And find your core affinity group. Associate with them, work with them, and try to get the job done. And we all had normal jobs. You asked about our professions. While the movie was being made, we all had day jobs or were going to college. Right now, Austin Green and I are involved in starting up a media production business using our equipment, which is just sitting in our closets, you know, so we might as well use it to make a living. So we're doing that. James Lane continues with his day job for the time being, as does Chris Emery. But we're just normal guys, and we
can. That's just it. Most, you know, you guys are just people. You're a citizens committee that that's the point. You know, we're not talking about a bunch of attorneys here. We're not talking about a bunch of government.
Not at all.
We're talking about people who get together and do something, and that is the only way this kind of stuff's going to get out.
Exactly. And pull your talents and resources, find a goal, work towards it, don't give up. Find whatever solution you need to achieve to overcome the obstacles which will be thrown up in your path. Do not give up. Be flexible of other people's opinions. Be tolerant and be aware that you yourself are not perfect and are prone to mistakes yourself. And just keep on trudging forward towards the ultimate goal and ignoring the things that are going to bring you down and divide you. And we're all in this together. And it's amazing. Once you get into, I mean, we all started off by saying we're tired of sitting on the bench. We're going to put a step forward. I started off by putting together a handwritten propaganda sheet, which I passed out by hand. And those efforts eventually led to collaboration with the bombing committee and Chris Emery and others. You just got to put your foot in the ring and then put your footstep forward. Find your niche, your creative impulse to fight the New World Order. And the universe, in whatever manifestation it chooses, will provide. I have found that to be true.
And I think most important lesson to learn here is, you know, I've suffered this myself on three occasions now where the media completely reports the opposite of what you're doing. You cannot count on the media to support you.
Oh, not at all.
Or hardly even report on what you're doing. They will always turn it. They will always make it something other than it is. Hey, man, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Hope people got a lot of information today. OpenLive.com. And join me tomorrow for Mr. Hal Anthony, who is a true miner. We'll be talking about the original mining laws and just about the only way to get property nowadays is to actually make a mining claim. Very interesting stuff. Thank you very much, and take care.
DisclosureNewsOnline.com is a web version of Disclosure News Magazine Monthly. It's an alternative news product from Southern Illinois, now in its 8th year. DisclosureNewsOnline.com details the crime, corruption, and official misconduct rampant in the state of Illinois. For local, state, and national news affecting all of us, presented with a no-nonsense approach, visit DisclosureNewsOnline.com to subscribe and have the full print version of Disclosure News mailed to your home monthly. That's DisclosureNewsOnline.com.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Camping, hiking, backpacking, Alice Packs, military surplus, tactical gear. The list goes on and on and on. You can find it at CJL Enterprise. That's ENTERPRIZE.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. We are open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year on the web. Again, it's CJL Enter, ENTERPRIZE.com. CJL Enterprise.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. CJL Enterprise.
Will 2012 bring the Mayan end of world or the global banking collapse? In 2007, one man, Mike Dillard, made five predictions which forecasted the 2008 economic crisis and the pending Eurozone collapse. This week, Mike unleashes three brand new, shocking, must-watch videos with predictions for the coming year. www.thethreevideos.com. Over the past year, Mike Dillard has helped thousands of ordinary people create and recover wealth by tapping into the black box investing strategies the big banks don't want you to know about. www.thethreevideos.com. As the European banking system implodes and governments collapse at breakneck speeds, the next 12 months will be the most anticipated and important months in modern human history. This will make 2008 look like a walk in the park. Everyone will be affected. Go to www.thethreevideos.com now. Learn how to prepare your family and prosper during the global financial collapse.
This is the Micro Effect.